2 days in a row, isn't it?
Excellent. Okay.
Thank you. We will begin our work session on Montana Dakota Utilities Company 2022 electric rate increase application. It's case number PU-22-194. I'm Randy Christman, chairman of the commission, joined by commissioners Sherry Augenhoffert and Julie Fedorchek. And so, I guess we don't need a quorum to have a work session, do we? But anyway, we're all here. And we had our hearing, and there was a settlement shortly before. Went through the hearing, and now staff and portfolio holder have come up with a draft of the settlement to get all the details of what that settlement proposal included. I don't really have any opening comments, Commissioner.
I don't.
Okay. So then, Chair, I'll turn it over to you for opening comments and then just move into the settlement agreement and the order.
Thank you, Commissioner Christman. I just got the draft order yesterday, so I have to say that just for me being out too, I haven't gone through it in its entirety. So thank God we have this work session to kind of work through it. So Adam and I talked a little bit briefly this morning. One of the areas that I do question, and if you guys want to backtrack, I'm totally open to have this be a easy-flowing discussion, is in the area of the margin sharing. So Adam agreed to kind of walk through some of that and other things of this order that he feels want to point out, and then just open it up for discussion. So Adam, I'll let you go through the order, and then let's talk a little bit about the margin sharing, the 70-30.
So the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order, I think currently what you have in front of you is labeled as the order settlement, so I'll have to change that.
What page?
On the first page, right. The labeling, you have order settlement. That should read findings of fact, conclusions of law and order.
Oh, okay. Okay, you can proceed, Adam.
Going through the preliminary statement defines the timelines and everything else that the commission did to get to reach this settlement. If we want to go to the findings of fact, number two shows the reductions from the company's original request. The main driver there is the ROE reduction from 10.5 to 9.75%.
And again, do you just want to be interrupted as we go,
yeah,
or did
yep.
you want to go through the whole thing?
Yep.
So, this doesn't really matter to me, but I don't recall that in orders before that we've usually abbreviated things down to where we put like 3,083. And have it in the header that those are thousands.
Okay.
Is that how we've usually done orders? I guess I just usually like consistency, but I don't know. Do we typically do that?
We can change it. I'm not sure.
Recall. That's how it was written in the settlement agreement. Yeah. I'm guessing that's why you copied it.
If we've done this before and it's normal, then I'm just noticing now, then don't change it.
Okay.
But if this is an anomaly of how we do orders, then I guess I'd like to stick with a pattern. Sure.
Also, we have the depreciation was kept at the current rates, as well as the 50% reduction to incentive compensation. Those are the main drivers that get us to a settlement revenue requirement of about $15 million. Number three, we could strike that out. I was originally going to, or we could say something to the effect that the settlement results in a rate increase that is 30%, that represents like 30% of a reduction to the original ask.
I see.
Something like that.
I like that.
Okay.
That it explains, yep.
So you want to keep the number three?
Yes.
Yep. And then I'll add that in. Add it in, okay. Number four deals with the ROE as well as the rate of return that's authorized and the capital structure. Also involved in that, it gets to where Commissioner Haugenhoffert wants to talk a little bit about the margin sharing as well as the earnings sharing mechanism, I believe. So the settlement provides an earnings sharing provision where the company's earnings above 10% will be shared with 70% refunded to the customer, and then 30% will be retained by MDU. So I think one of the questions was perhaps how the ESA is affected by this. So, in other words, if we have a 9%, I think
it would the share of the company would be just a hair over $3 million for the earnings sharing.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I was wondering if that was trade secret
for the margin sharing from the ESA.
From the ESA. So. If the company earned prior to factoring in the $3 million that the ESA would give them, and the $3 million is the maximum, assuming that Applied Digital is at 100% of their load, the company would retain the full $3 million. And as that ROE prior to that ESA margin revenue being added begins to increase, the company's share of that begins to decrease to the point where once it reaches 10% ROE, anything after that, the max they could retain would be $900,000.
After it reaches their allowable ROE.
Yeah. Well, the earnings sharing cap. Of 10%, which is when they would
the 10% ROE.
Yeah. So in other words, if they were earning a 10% ROE before adding the margin, all this margin, then they would only get 30% of that. So 30% of the $3 million.
Anything after reaching their 10% ROE.
Right.
Is there a term for that, the 10% number? You know, 9.75 is the ROE.
Mm-hmm.
But they get to keep everything up to 10%. Is there a term for that? Or
there isn't a specified term for that.
Incentive.
Right.
Here we have a chance to make regulatory history by creating our own acronym for that.
We have been using the term dead band, but
okay.
Yeah. Dead band?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh. So
we're too late.
So where I pause is I understand they get to keep that, you know, everything with the ROE and in that 10%. And I understand the settlement agreement is 70-30, and we use the word incentivize, and I think there's always should be an incentive to the company to do best practices. So tell me why they shouldn't return all of it back to the ratepayers.
Yeah, I think it comes down to incenting the company to have practices whereby maybe they would cut their O&M such that they would earn a higher ROE and perhaps share in some of those efficiency gains. So it's a way to incent the company to become a little more efficient.
Well, I think if they don't get any, to keep any of it, what's the their motivation? Right.
Yep. And I think even without a beneficial share as a motivation, yeah, hopefully I would think if they just see something that is no longer needed and is wasteful, they would eliminate it even if they weren't benefiting from it. But if there's no potential to benefit from it, then it would only be those most obvious things. They'd never take any risk at all to do something that might save money if there's no end game benefit.
Yeah, very good point.
I still pause, but that's okay. You can continue.
Do you not think that's a motivation, or what's your pause, Sherry?
Well, my pause is I just think they should be doing it, always looking for those best practices, incentives. It's just a common practice to do things that I understand their rate of return. I mean, that they need the financial base, but what are they doing to, as a company, to do the best practices while protecting the ratepayers?
Yeah, I guess it's, I see it as companies are going to do more of something if they can benefit from it, and better to have them, the customers, get a smaller fraction of a dollar versus zero of no dollars, or a larger fraction of $0. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it makes some sense to me to have the company and the customers be in the same boat trying to both win. Okay. So
no,
I think it's a pretty good structure.
I guess I was more concerned, I think, initially during the hearing with them being able to keep all of it to 10% when the ROE is 9.75. So I guess my thought that day was, what's the point of the ROE then? Isn't it really 10? But actually by leaving that, but having the ROE less than that 10, at 9.75. I think I actually asked this question that day and got an answer that I understood, but I can't remember what it was. So what's the benefit of having the ROE at 9.75 if we're going to let them keep 100% of the money up to 10?
Well, it would be better, well, I shouldn't say that. The company keeps more within that dead band, as you call it. So it's kind of part of that settlement. So in other words, if you reduce the 10% down to 9.75%, then that gives the company a little less wiggle room to make money without sharing in between that dead band. So it gives them a little buffer, I guess, in which they wouldn't have to share.
Doesn't it? I'm trying to think out loud, and then that always gets me in trouble most of the time. Wouldn't we be setting the rates if we wanted it to be... If we looked at 10 as the actual ROE, since they keep everything up to that, if we set the ROE at 10, we'd be setting the rates higher, right? So that's the benefit of having the ROE a little lower rates that they get to charge are less. Right. Am
yep.
I right?
Yep. We'd be setting for an opportunity to okay. reach that revenue requirement.
I remembered
That's
it.
That's a good answer. And you.
Somewhat retained it.
Yeah.
Took a while to get back there again. Okay. Did you have more on that?
No, I just wanted the discussion.
Adam, maybe one thing that might be worth discussing, and I know we discussed it pretty extensively already. Do you have any thoughts on how this may impact subsequent rate cases if there is a 100% earning sharing mechanism?
Yeah, so then if there was 100%, if there is a 100% rate sharing mechanism,
mm-hmm.
then if you don't allow the company, if you have a structure like this where it's 70-30 and the company can lower their O&M in a future rate case, let's say, all those dollars are considered kind of sunk costs and salary, et cetera, such that when they come back to us in a rate case, then those expenses would have been lower. So therefore, the rates in a future rate case may be lower as well.
In short, if the company takes steps to be more efficient with their expenses in the future, we would be looking at those where the expenses are set at and for the subsequent setting of the next revenue requirement.
Yeah. Yeah. So if they have no incentive to do that, then
right.
it doesn't we don't get those savings that the company finds, which they can find easier than we can find yeah. in a rate case.
And the only thing I would add is, for my own thoughts in addition to what discussion I have with Adam, is a return component for the company really is consistent as we all go back to our rate school days. When you look at it, us as a replacement for market competition for a natural monopoly in and of itself. But I would point out, as I was kind of rolling this around, the one thing that is unique about this is that there hasn't been a case where we've had a rate case where we set a revenue requirement where we know that there's going to be an additional $3 million, margin sharing outside of this. And had this been at a different time, the revenue requirements would have been set and that subsequently would have been, decided. But we do have a rare opportunity when we do have this in front of us to see that there is going to be a higher likelihood of over-earnings
mm-hmm.
in the current case.
And with those higher earnings, the earnings go back to the customer. The more they earn, that with that 70-30, the more that goes back to the ratepayers.
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
Right, I guess I was just using it to differentiate other situations where
right.
we've been in when we're discussing margin sharing, that maybe as a possibility, just this may be a case that's differentiated from others based upon that factor to look at a different margin sharing or even a 730 above the ROE, but certainly not pursuing any of these with these other alternative options with you, just noting that this is a rare differentiating circumstance.
This one is likely to actually happen. Right?
Right?
I mean, yeah. That's...
More likely, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we'll kind of go through a little more of it. Number five shows the total overall increase in the revenue based on rate class, which notes that the average monthly increase for a residential electric customer would be $8.27. Let's see. Five. Yep. Number six just details the total fixed basic service charge. Number seven is saying that within 9 months of the approval of this settlement, MDU is going will file an application to change the way that they allocate their fuel and purchase power based on an E8760 allocation method. So this is details energy. So in other words, to consume energy in off-peak hours is cheaper than to consume it in on-peak hours. And if you're an industrial customer and you're using, you're constantly running, you're using more off-peak energy than, let's say, a residential user who is turning lights on during the on-peak moments. So what this would do is this would allocate more energy to residential consumers of that type and less to the industrial users.
Was that a change that was proposed in the original case, or is that something that the industrial users kind of brought into the equation during settlement talks?
Yeah, that appeared in the settlement discussions, in the settlement agreement. It's one of the provisions.
And I believe NSP and Otter Tail Power allocate their costs in this fashion.
Are you sure?
Not positive. That would be subject to check.
I do think that's right, though.
Yep, okay.
Commissioners, one thing that did come up regarding paragraph 7, if you recall from the rate case, was, you know, in the settlement agreement, the parties do agree that ultimately Montana Dakota Utilities will make this application. And I guess the point that was made was that Montana Dakota Utilities could do this regardless of the settlement. In fact, the intervener could file an application mm-hmm. regardless of the settlement. And to the extent that we need to approve necessarily that provision requiring some person to make a party to make an application, I'm not sure if there's a necessity for that. And in fact, even though we would still have an opportunity to take a look at it, I'm not sure if the commission necessarily needs to put their imprimatur on a company being required to file an application that's going to change a customer allocation of costs to the residential class. And so conceptually, what another option, even though hypothetically we could approve the requirement in the settlement agreement for Montana Dakota Utility to file it, we could just provide some additional disclaimer that this is something that's agreed upon between the parties and has no bearing upon ultimately the commission's decision. But the parties are free to make the filing for subsequent commission review.
So I assume there's one, probably two or three, that really want this.
Sure.
The parties would... If we didn't include this as a requirement, that it was just left as an option, would that potentially cause one or more of those parties to say, no, we are no longer in favor of this settlement? Because we don't know if they're going to do it or not. And that's, I'm sure, a big part of what got them on board.
Sure. Hypothetically, any alteration we make to the settlement agreement could impact that. In the past, we've made alterations, minor ones. I wouldn't see this one as a major impactful one currently, but there's always a hypothetical chance if you modify it that the party will subsequently withdraw their support of it.
I think it's great that you raised that, Jack, and it's always, you know, good to carefully evaluate what has to be included and what's and what doesn't. In this case, I think it's kind of helpful to have the company file it, because one of the frustrations I have with rate cases is that these kinds of things seem to come in sort of the latter end of rate cases, and then we don't have time to think about it really. Or, you know, it's a huge adjustment, and how would it affect the other jurisdictions? And, you know, just like, if it feels to me like this would be a helpful thing to see outside of an active rate case and contemplate. So that's why I would like to receive it. Now, does it need to be ordered? Maybe not. Maybe there's another way of going about receiving that that wouldn't require us to put it in the order. I mean, we could request it after the fact, I suppose.
Sure. Well, if we'd like to see it, might as well leave it in there. I mean, if we want to make sure that, in fact, it will be received.
I have no problem keeping it in.
The way I view it, and correct me if I'm wrong, if a party in the future added something that we didn't want to see or didn't think was appropriate, we could always take it out. This doesn't set some precedent that this is what the commission does, and we can't in the future take some other special request out of it if we don't want to entertain it.
We also have an opportunity to deny an application. The reason why I usually bring up stuff like this for necessity is we put ourselves in a situation at times where we've had recurring applications by order, really with no necessity for them to be filed with us at all.
Yeah.
For a number of reasons. About. And so.
Is this a recurring filing?
This is just one.
Okay.
Okay, let's see what else we have. I think that it pretty much does it in terms of going through the order here.
Adam,
do you see anything in the order that might need changing or modification?
I do see some changes and modifications that need to be made, not largely substantial or majorly substantive, and I just received it this morning, so I hadn't taken a look at it till this morning. But not necessarily ones that we need to go through. I think once it'll be pretty obvious once I give you a track changes exactly where they are and the purpose for them, as in I won't be making major changes to the findings. The one thing I guess I would like to bring up with Adam possibly is the mechanism for over-earnings, refunds. I know we touched on that a little bit. And do you think there's a necessity to have anything in an ordering provision regarding that or addressing that?
I'd have to think about that.
Are you looking at number four, Jack?
I'm looking at a provision that doesn't exist in the order.
Okay.
As it is right now.
That was actually one of my concerns, too. It's when we've never had a settlement or a commission decision on a rate case that has happened to be exactly what the interim rate was. And so there's always a provision to balance these things out. And so that's what I thought was noticeably missing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, if looking at the likelihood and just thinking about the values and how the rates have changed, and Adam, I mean, this is on the spot as well, so feel free to disagree with me on this. I would anticipate a lot of these refunds to be of a small value to the point where this isn't going to be a large amortization over a year. If there is a refund, it'll likely be a single refund or maybe a refund over a couple months, more than likely. I mean, if you think about how an overearning of a few million being returned back to customers would impact the residential customer rate or any other customer rates as well.
Right.
Do you have some thoughts on that, Adam?
I'd have to look into it a little more.
Sure.
But it seems reasonable.
That it would probably be more than likely a
small impact. If we're dealing with a couple million.
Right. It would be a quantifiable impact, but probably not something that would be a large sum that would require large-scale amortization or payback to the customers over a number of months. With that in mind, I brought it up not because I think it's absolutely necessary to figure it out right now. I think it'll be easier to determine upon an annual report filing of the best manner based upon the sum of the over-earnings that could be refunded back to the customers in the manner it should be. But I did want to bring it up just because I did see it was absent in the order without any parameters.
Now you're talking about...
the over-earnings sharing mechanism.
Over-earnings sharing. What about the interim rate difference?
I think that we probably should have an order provision about that as well.
Okay. I think we usually do.
We usually do. If my recollection is correct, and we may want a finding on that too. Did you address the interim rates in the findings?
There is a mention of it.
Right, but not in the subsequent differential towards the end.
I don't think the interims are in the findings of fact. It's more in the
history.
Preliminary statement, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Right.
So we might need to add some there.
It wasn't, I guess, to show what's there, but we would be able to use it to quantify, I guess, the difference between the interim rates and the set rates as a finding.
Interim rates were on revenue of 10.9. And then the final revenue is 15.9, is it?
Mm-hmm. 15.2. Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, you were collecting riders that this will permanently do so.
Yeah, I don't know. Will they get are you thinking that people will get a rate decrease? That they're getting, their rates will go down after this?
It seems to me like it would be pretty close. But I don't know which way it falls. But
yeah, I couldn't say off the top of my head. There are a lot of moving parts between this and the EASA, exactly where rates are going to fully end up. On the rate case alone, I don't see there being a refund, back to the customers as it is in a lot of other rate cases that we normally see. The reshuffling of everything will be interesting, and that's something we maybe would be helpful for all of us, just even for the purposes of communicating the case forward that we have. Not in necessarily order, but available to all of us.
Mm-hmm. I think it should be acknowledged in here, and then if it calculates out to zero, then...
Right.
There's nothing else to do, but
sure.
I kind of hate to see the order go out and not even acknowledge that this isn't the same as what the interim hike was.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When I think about a finding, it'll probably be a very simple finding, almost a one sentence towards the end of the order. So what I hear is maybe that addition. That we're keeping the earnings sharing mechanism at 70-30. That we still want the E-8760 application to be filed. I'll provide a couple different changes to conclusions of law. No substantive changes to minor changes, but not substantive changes to the findings. And on the ordering provision, Maybe having a, we probably don't need an ordering provision then on the interim rates, more than likely, if there is not a refund, with that in mind. But we may want to create just a little bit of structure, and maybe staff can give just a general proposal and order provision of how and when the a possible over earnings sharing mechanism can be returned to customers, or how it'll be reviewed at least.
I do think we'll need some sort of an explanation by the time of approval of how the interim rates are going to compare with the final bills the customers see.
Oh, towards, you mean for an increase?
Right.
Yeah.
Because that's, it's helpful to have that information so that customers aren't hearing that we approved a, you know, 9% rate increase and they think it's on top of what they're already paying.
Right.
So.
Absolutely. We'll make sure to get that to you. And if we do put out these orders at the same time, the ESA and the rate case orders, then that actually might be a good opportunity to
explain it all.
Yeah. Walk through the configuration of the difference in rates.
Uh-huh. And that seems to always be the perception. We just always had a big rate increase last July.
Yeah, now we have another one.
All you're ever doing is raising rates every month.
So did I miss anything, Adam? I think I...
No, I think we had done everything, yeah. Thanks. If anyone else, any of the other commissioners, have any other issues they'd like to address?
Okay. So what would be the timing of it actually becoming effective and showing up on people's bills if we were to get this finalized, and let's say it was approved in early June, whenever that meeting is. So then everything needs to be calculated out. And when would that start showing up on people's bills?
Along with the ESA savings, and when it starts to ramp up, and when things get both in the fuel clause adjustment rider, if that is approved, as well as the reduction in the transmission rider? Like, when would rates start to steady out?
No, I'm wondering when am I going to get the bill insert that the commission approved this, and I can look on my bill and now it's all new rates. When does it become effective?
Adam, there'd be a compliance period first to allow them to, and then they would subsequently likely see it after that.
Yes, right, yep.
So it's going to be more like in that July or August.
If we approve it June 7th, what would be the likely timing? Maybe we can...
I don't know their billing cycle off the top of my head, so I'd have to... We could get that back. We can get that to you after this meeting if you'd like. We could shoot an email to you.
Okay. And I know you guys don't write the things that the company puts out. Mm-hmm. But just the way you kind of responded to the previous question, Adam, about, well, you know, there's also the ESA thing, and I'm going to be very unhappy with anyone who bundles these things all together and kind of uses the whole data processing center and the benefits of that to disguise what's happening to rates, and not just with this company, but kind of all over. Mm-hmm. I hope no one tries to just portray this as one big bundle thing. We need explanations to the people what's happening with the company as it's existed and has evolved over the years. And then separately, explanations of what happened with this very unique situation.
Randy, are you saying you would object to doing them together? I hear you on explaining them separately and not like washing them out, but are you opposed to having them happen at the same time so that we can have sort of a bill impact that's explained all together?
Part of me wishes that one could be held up so that they would come at different times, but these are significant dollar amounts too, and I think it's just fundamentally wrong to withhold something. Every time you withhold something, you have a shift by 1 month of some people who weren't even there for part of it paying on things at the end and or benefiting from things at the end. And I think these are too big to just delay because of that. I just bring it up. I hope everyone explains these things separately, not trying to disguise something that causes costs to go up by lumping it in with something completely separate that causes costs to go down that happen to come at the same time. So, no, I don't want to do any one of them.
Okay.
My intention was, is if these got done, to hopefully present both of these orders on June 7th and, work that way and then present it thoroughly at the commission meeting and to explain it, and I'll work with the staff too on the description and being very clear and trying to summarize it.
Yeah. Adam, I just noticed you still have me as chair on the order too.
Oh, really? Okay.
Randy didn't mention it.
Yeah.
Maybe you didn't notice
it. I didn't notice it.
We didn't get to the...
I relinquished that title in January.
Right. Didn't notice that Adam was that upset with me.
Yeah, right?
All right. I have nothing else. I'll ask the other. I mean, Randy, Julie, if you have anything else.
I don't.
Nope.
Adam,
yep.
Jack.
Nothing for me.
We're concluded. Okay. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Good work.